time ago, an American airplane dropped one bomb on Hiroshima.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this.
The American people, I think, is good people. They have not to charge with the guilty of all the lies.
Welcome back to the Cold War podcast, Ray, episode 177, where we continue our story of the creation of the CIA.
Yes, let's get into it.
Where did we finish last time, Barry? Bear?
Oh, the OSS was terminated by Truman on September 20th, 1945. There was a report that came out that pretty much slacked Wild Bill Donovan's reputation and all the work he had done. And now he is going to bitch to members of Congress and he's going to bitch to members of press. But as far as we are concerned, as far as he is concerned, it seems that his dream is truly dead.
So, meanwhile, in Berlin, Alan Dulles, OSS officer, and the ranking OSS officer in Germany,
right,
was using a mansion for his new headquarters.
Well, yeah.
And his favorite lieutenant, Richard Helms, was trying to spy on the Soviets. Now,
yes,
according to Helms, speaking 50 years later, what you have to remember is that in the beginning, we knew nothing. Our knowledge of what the other side was up to, their intentions, their capabilities was nil or next to it. Mm. If you came up with a telephone book or a map of an airfield, that was pretty hot stuff. God. We were in the dark about a lot of the world. Now, Helms had become famous when, as a 23-year-old, he interviewed Adolf Hitler at the 1936 Olympics.
Oh, cool.
He dined out on that story for years.
I would.
Hitler. Yeah, it wasn't that impressive.
If I could give a very short bio of Helms, you'll start to get an idea that a lot of people like him, they might have been gung-ho, they might have been patriotic, they were obviously well-educated and intelligent, but that has absolutely nothing to do with how spycraft works, how Europe works, how Asia works. And these guys, just like we were saying in the last episode, they don't know what the hell's going on in the world because, you know, America's kind of focused on itself. But anyways, Helms comes from a family that has lots of money and lots of influence. Various family members over the generations have had positions in Congress and the White House. He went to Princeton. He was a lawyer. He was a diplomat. He'd worked in Istanbul and Switzerland. He was a part of the American delegation to the League of Nations at one point. So he's got some legal and diplomatic experience in the world. But again, he's an American. He's pretty isolated. And as far as the ins and outs of spycraft, he, just like a lot of these other people, really don't know what they're doing despite his sincerity.
Yeah, as he himself said.
Exactly.
He had no idea what they were doing.
Yeah.
Now, he was about to return to the US from Berlin when he got the message the OSS was disbanded, but then he got a message saying, don't leave yet, as it turned out.
Yes.
Back in Washington, people were pulling strings behind Truman's back to try and keep the OSS alive. Our old friend Henry Stimson, Stimmo, Secretary of War, had just retired. He had been one of the main enemies of the idea of a CIA, a peacetime intelligence service, an American Gestapo. Right. So taking advantage of the transition, Brigadier General John Magruder, Donovan's deputy, had a quiet meeting with another old friend of ours, John McCloy, the Assistant Secretary of War. Magruder, of course, went on later on to have his own TV show. I got a clip from it here.
Magruder, making life-saving inventions out of household materials. Magruder, getting in and out of ultra-sticky situations.
So, yeah, it was huge for him. I mean, it was, he was like, fuck the CIA, man. TV's where it's at.
Right. But here's a little bit of Magruder's background. He had been in the army since 1910. He had been in China trying to work with Chiang Kai-shek. And obviously, he had his strings pulled very well by Chiang Kai-shek, who was a master politician. And so when he comes out of China, goes back into Washington, he's like, you know, we can't trust people in foreign lands. They fucking lie to us all the time. We have to know what's going on everywhere. And when something like this comes up, we have to be able to change the situation by covert actions. So his time in China had really made him skeptical. And so now he wants to come in and actually help create this thing, because as far as he's concerned, America desperately needs this invisible hand and this ability to gather intelligence.
So together, Magruder and McCloy decided to countermand Truman's order to disband the OSS.
Isn't that treason to go against?
Yeah.
Or is it patriotism?
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Well, or is it super patriotism?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Depends on what side of the Civil War you're on, I guess.
Good point.
But clever, they changed its name from the OSS to the SSU, the Strategic Services Unit. It's not the Office of Strategic Services. It's the Strategic Services Unit. It's completely different. Truman's
color.
Like, hold on, I told you to disband that. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Well, what's this? Oh, that's completely different. What are you talking about? You just changed one letter.
Right, no.
Yeah, but you, like the O went at the beginning.
Right.
The U goes at the end.
Huge difference.
Huge difference. Like Barry and Stan worked for this on months, man. Like, trust me.
On coke.
There's like the
weekends. Ties undone. Cigarette stubs in the desk.
OSS was their supplier of coke, and they were terrified. They did it. Gratuitous. They were like, don't do that to us.
Yeah.
So they changed the name to the SSU. Oh, McCloy then asked his good friend Robert Lovett, the Assistant Secretary for Air War, who would go on to become a Secretary of Defense later on, to set up a secret commission to plot out the course for American intelligence, not to tell Truman about it.
Treason.
And they just tell him later, after they'd figured it all out, better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission. So these three guys are basically creating the CIA behind Truman's back. Magruder called it the holy cause of Central Intelligence.
I'm sorry, I just have trouble with that. This cause is so worthy, I'm going to commit treason, ignore my boss, because he doesn't get it, because he's just a former haberdasherist from Missouri. I know better than he does. The chain of the chain of command doesn't apply anymore. I'm going to operate behind his back. I mean, but again, I think part of the thing was, if we can get something up and running, maybe it's a little harder to kill something that's up and running versus something that's been told to stand down. And if we can get some juicy information, give it to them, justify our existence, maybe they'll keep us around. I think they were literally trying to do something like that, to try to get some information and to show that they, you know, that it was worthy, and maybe they would be forgiven for their sins.
Well, I was going to say, the other theory is that it was a nod, nod, wink, wink kind of a situation. Truman he said, listen to my words carefully.
Is he shaking his head? Right.
Yeah. You have to disband the OSS. The watch, mother, will be ready. You know what I mean? No, I mean disband the OSS. No, I mean, not as good as a wink to a blind bat. And Magruder was like, aha. I get it.
Wink.
President Truman, get it.
Right away, sir.
Like, he said later, he used to have this policy with women too. Like, they'd say, well, she said she didn't want it. And he was like,
there was a tone.
Truman wouldn't have been wearing that short red dress if he didn't want me to bill the CIA. Come on. Got to read between the lines here. Yeah. She said she didn't want it, but we know she really did. Because Truman was a... Because Truman was a...
Your mother is a dirty, dirty whore. Oh.
And he was a racist, dirty whore. But that's beside the
point. Yeah.
Stop making the American people part of your experiment.
So that's what Truman said to him.
Right.
Good point. Yeah. So that's the other theory. Now, there's nothing recorded anywhere that Truman gave him a nod and a wink, but that is one of the stories that is spread around. Well, yeah, he really wanted it. He just couldn't say that he wanted an American Gestapo, but everyone wants their own Gestapo.
Oh,
come
I
on,
do.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, I do too. I'd have a Gestapo tomorrow if I could afford it. Private brown shirts running around beating the fuck out of people I don't like. Oh, Facebook comments. Oh, my God. When people, this is the latest one I've been laughing about. People, Democrats, American Democrats that are still trying to argue about Russian collusion with me or Hunter Biden's laptop or whatever. One guy in particular likes to say, come on, Cameron, you're smarter than that.
Oh, good it's one. Good one.
Yeah. It's this sneaky little ad hominem backhanded compliment
ego.
Insult.
Yeah.
You're smarter than that. And I'm like, well, A, if I am smart, maybe you should shut the fuck up and listen to what I'm saying and you might learn something.
Yeah.
Secondly, that's just an ad hominem attack and you can't be taken seriously. People who use ad hominem attacks are usually indicating by doing so that they can't actually play the ball. They have to play the man. They don't have any facts to provide, so they attack the player. So really you're just diminishing your own credibility and I'm not going to take you seriously or respond to any of your future comments. Thank you for playing.
Thirdly,
but,
my brown shirts will be visiting you tomorrow.
Yeah. So, you're right. That's where I was going with that.
But, Cam, no one knows more about constitutional law than you do, because I know you used to be a practicing lawyer.
I was, yeah.
Can you create a federal agency without anything written down on your own with a nod and a wink?
Well, the answer, Ray, and this has been tested at the Supreme Court many times, is the answer is yes, you can, if you can get away with it.
Oh,
yeah, if you can get away with it.
The caveat. Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir.
When I was a trial lawyer, we took that all the way to the Supreme Court.
Did you?
And the Supreme Court unanimously, it was one of the few times, all of the justices said, no, you can't, but then they all went, wink, wink, hey, know what I mean? No, you can't, hey.
Nods a good wink.
I mean,
I gotcha. Yeah. Thank you, Professor Riley.
The watch, Professor. Now, another guy who was there at the beginning was Frank Wisner, the Wiz, as they would call him. There's a whole musical Michael Jackson made about him, The Wiz. It was a beautiful thing. When Michael Jackson looked like Diana Ross. Hey, that's not bad. You can do a good hee-hee.
Thank you.
Wow. Is that because your nutsack is up high in the... Is that what it is? Up in the high in the body there?
It's pretty high.
Cold?
Is
it pretty cold in Virginia right now?
It's cold. Yeah.
Your mulberries, your chestnuts are riding
high. The point
is,
there's still some talent involved. It's not just the weather and my... The position of my testicles.
Uh-huh.
There's some talent. Anyway, it is a skill. Yeah. Thank you.
Where did Michael touch you when you went to visit his bedroom in Neverland?
There.
Oh, it's his audio. Your nutsack is riding high.
It's still in hiding.
Ray, would you like to be able to sing high like me, Ray?
Yes, I would.
Do that, Ray.
This is how I used to talk.
Just put your nutsack in Uncle Michael's mouth, Ray. It's not gay when it's between friends, Ray. It's not gay in front of us.
Okay.
Has a high voice, Ray.
If you say so. And then I went, hee hee.
Now, when Helms was in Berlin trying to build their espionage operation with the Soviets being his target, Wisner wanted to develop a covert action team. He wanted to send people in to fucking destabilize shit and blow shit up. Black Ops, baby.
Go team.
What was that?
Yeah.
What was that? What was that game I used to play? Splinter Cell. Oh, he wanted to create Splinter Cell.
Gotcha. Oh my god.
Yeah. Splinter Cell. Wait, no.
So
wait.
Wisner. No,
wait.
Go ahead.
Wait.
Sorry. I'm waiting.
Who did the voice of lead character? Was it Max Fisher? I think. Who is the lead? Sam Fisher in Splinter Cell.
I don't know. Was this a cartoon? Was it a movie? Was it a TV show? Was it a...
It was an Xbox game. It was about a Black Ops guy called Sam Fisher. One of the greatest games I've ever played. You're basically like this Black Ops guy, and you have to go in. Like most shoot 'em up games, you know, you go in, you have to shoot everyone. This was the opposite. Came out in like 2002, one of the early Xbox games. You had to sneak around and assassinate people without being seen or caught.
Right.
You would normally have to go into buildings with a lot of guards, a lot of security cameras and lasers and all that kind of stuff. And you had to sneak around quietly in the dark with infrared goggles on, not make any noise.
Right.
If you killed someone, if you took out a guard, you had to do it quietly and hide their body in a closet.
Oh, God.
So other guards wouldn't see the body. It was brilliant. It was great. I got to go. It was developed by Ubisoft. I got to visit their office and interview one of their lead designers in San Francisco. It was great. But their voice of the main character, Sam Fisher, was done by... Michael motherfucking Ironside.
Nice. Oh, I want to hear his.
Yeah, baby.
I got to look up some YouTube videos now of him doing
that. I'm gonna do it now because you know.
Because you can.
I wanted to.
Right.
Because I can. Yeah.
Because you can.
Here we go.
This is the fifth installment of Sam Fisher. Have I approached him differently this way? By the nature of the process of how we made the game, yes, I have this time.
Hi.
The whole story seems to be more dense. It's more human. The relationships seem more human. I caught myself actually when we were doing some of the dialogue, especially around Sarah, my daughter, and stuff like that, that it got a little emotionally richer than I'm used to.
Oh, that voice, man.
Yes. Deep.
Deep in the cojones, in the maronies.
Who killed my daughter?
I have a 10-year-old, as this is being taped. That is one area of my life where it's very rich in emotions. And be able...
Oh, that voice.
Does he have emotions? Oh. I can't tell.
He's Michael Ironside. That's why he's called Ironside. He has no emotions. He's iron. Made of iron.
Man.
Yeah, they fired him, Actor I think, Michael Ironside, after, I don't know, the first or second game. They replaced him. Wasn't the same.
Oh, sure.
And they had to bring him back.
Platforms are no longer there. They
had to bring him back because he's Michael fucking Ironside.
Yeah,
never,
bitch. Can't be
you
replaced.
You don't fire Michael Ironside. Michael Ironside fires you.
I quit. Yeah.
What did he do in... He shot a guy through the hand or something.
He threw a knife. He threw a knife and stuck it in his hand against in a wall, just to make a point.
One of his own guys.
Yeah,
to
one
make
of his
a point.
During training, just to
Starship
make a point.
Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's leadership right there. You'll remember this, won't you?
He learned that.
Sorry.
When he was in the OSS.
Yeah. Fucking it. Yeah.
Frank Wisner wanted a covert action team. He had been stationed in Romania.
Right.
Probably there when Donovan lost his briefcase to a stripper.
Probably.
And he was reporting back to his bosses that he was having a huge success spying on the Russians.
Yes.
Oh, spying on the Russians. Going so well. Now, he had been a spy for about a year at this stage.
Yeah.
The Russians had been spying for 200 years at this point. They already had agents inside the OSS.
Wow.
And had infiltrated Wisner's network of informants in Romania. But he thought he was doing such a fucking bang up job. And the Russians were like, oh, da, you spy on us, good American comrade, da.
You're too much for us.
drinking his vodka behind his back.
Can I go on a sexual segue?
Oh, I wish you would.
Thank you.
It's been too long.
So, Wisner, he was a corporate lawyer. And like you said, he goes from New York, you know, everything is American, everything's clean cut, whatever. He's there. It's getting all dirty. He wants to do these covert ops. One of the people that he was working with was King Michael of Romania. And if you look up a picture of King Michael of Romania, the man is sex on a stick himself. He's got eyes you can get lost in. He's got lips that are so moist he could put out a drought by himself. Anyway, I'm sure they hooked up. But the point is, he's trying to help bring him back.
I'm done.
Yeah, exactly. What? Exactly. Yeah. No, I looked him up and I'm like, oh my God, King Michael was so, and the uniform. Anyway, that I just had to do that real quick. But yeah, so he thinks he's making these inroads and the Soviets are running circles around him and he doesn't even know it. So where were you? Oh, yeah.
Coming in King Michael's mouth, I think, is where you were.
And scene.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Now, Wisner or Wisner and Helms didn't like each other, but they had to work together, lot like us. Despite Truman putting the brakes on the idea of an American Gestapo, as I said before, everyone in Washington wanted one as long as they controlled it.
Exactly.
Joint Chiefs of Staff wanted it. Army wanted to run it. Navy wanted to run it. J. Edgar Hoover wanted to run it. State Department wanted to run it. Even the Postmaster General wanted to run it. He's like, oh, well, it's obvious. You know, we're already got your mail.
I'm the stamp
just
master.
Just read your mail.
Yeah.
We know what's going on. Everyone wanted to build their own little empire a little bit bigger. But as Magruder said, clandestine intelligence operations involve a constant breaking of all the rules. To put it boldly, such operations are necessarily extra-legal and sometimes illegal.
Sometimes.
So there you have it. The CIA was designed from the beginning to do extra-legal and illegal things.
Right. And with that, I mean, clearly the Pentagon, the State Department can't run it because they have to have plausible deniability. So you're right. So there has to be a new institution, a clandestine service that can do this because, look, we're going to break the law on a pretty regular basis. So that's what we need. But here's the problem, and you were hinting at this a couple of minutes ago. Who's going to run this? Because a lot of people have already gone. All those lawyers that we were mentioning, they've all gone back to New York to their prestigious law firms and their cushy lifestyles. What, 5 out of every 6 OSS veterans had gone back to their jobs. By the end of 1945, there's not even quite 2,000 agents left. Most of the stations in London, Paris, Rome, Vienna, Madrid, Lisbon, and Stockholm lost almost all of their agents. I mean, this thing has been purged. The people are disheartened. They've gone back to their cushy jobs. And so you can make this decision, that's great, but the personnel that you need have already flown the coop.
And we've mentioned Frank Wisner before. He was such a great and natural spy with a keen sense.
Oh, yeah.
He could read people. Unfortunately, not Kim Philby, because he was really close to Kim Philby. And,
I can't read him. He's got lead around him. Something.
Oh, he was good looking too. Yeah. That was the thing that did him. Like, he liked the good looking guys.
Who doesn't?
Oh, you know.
I gotta edit
exactly.
That out.
Yeah. And he ended up killing himself.
Oh.
1965. Committed suicide. But there you go. But anywho.
Yeah.
Back to the plausible deniability. Like the CIA was set up to do illegal things, which is why when the Church Commission happened in 1975, investigated the CIA, and they're like, "What? It's doing illegal things." I've actually got a clip from the Church. I've got a clip from the Church Committee hearings here.
Good.
How can you close me up on what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
I love that movie.
You're winning, sir. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Always got to pay him off. Yeah. If I could real quick, because I know Wisner's going to come back into this. For him, it was not only patriotism, you know, that kind of stuff, checking communism. But when he was there, he watched, I can't remember, was it like tens of thousands, or at least thousands, of Romanians who had German blood, you know, German lineage somewhere. They were all gathered up by the communists, put aboard trains, and shipped to Soviet Russia. Obviously never saw again. So he had this nightmare thing about here was something horrible that happened. I couldn't stop it. Next time I want to be able to do something about it. So he had also personal motivations as well, which is why he probably wanted covert operations versus just standing back and gathering information. He wanted to be more active to try to make sure something like that never happened again. So he was personally motivated.
But meanwhile, the OSS had been disbanded and 90% of its staff had returned to their old lives. Like yes. You said, gone back to their law firms, by the Dulles brothers and Frank Wisner had all gone back to their law firms. And Truman started to get lots of people telling him that he had fucked up by dismantling it.
Yes.
On January 9th, 1946, Admiral Leahy, Truman's mm-hmm. military chief of staff, he'd been FDR's chief of staff as well, told him rather bluntly to his face that intelligence had been handled in a disgraceful way.
They gutted it too much.
Truman decided to fix it, but in his own inimitable way, he decided to fix it in a half-assed country boy. Well, I'm just a farmer, straight-talking farmer boy from Missouri, right? Kind of way.
Yes.
Called in the Deputy Director of Naval Intelligence, Rear Admiral Sidney Sowers. Is that mm-hmm. how you pronounce that?
Or Sowers.
Sowers?
Sowers? Let's go with Sowers.
Yeah. He was a rich Democrat from Missouri and made him the director of the Central Intelligence Group.
Congratulations.
Not the Central Intelligence Agency. It's a group.
So it went from unit to group.
Yes. Yeah, we got it completely different, right? It was the SSU. Now it's the CIG. Completely different. Completely different beast. Hey,
yeah. I just have to ask real quick, how did Sowers make his money?
Don't recall. Please remind me.
Okay, be prepared to be underwhelmed. He and his family owned a string of Piggly Wiggly shops, the nation's first self-service supermarkets. I grew up with the Piggly Wiggly near me. It's a little rinky-dink country, you know, grocery store. But even though I haven't seen one in 20 years, there are still 530 stores in 17 states in America. So, but at the time, his money came from little grocery stores that people could go in there and do a lot of things for themselves. So good for him. But the point is, the war was over. He wanted to go back home. He was tired of all this. He was just looking forward to going back and being the Piggly Wiggly king. And now Truman pretty much, I guess, almost ambushes him saying, congratulations, you've got a new job. He didn't want it, but you don't tell the president no.
Okay, class, gather around. This morning, we're going to talk about nutrition. Who can tell me the name of one of the five food groups?
Oh, I know.
Well, tell us that.
The fuck is that? Some
Piggly Wiggly
TV show.
Yeah, no, they have. They still have stuff today, cartoons. They have T-shirts. They have stuff for kids. Piggly Wiggly going strong, baby.
Admiral Leahy recorded the moment of the investiture in his diary, January 24th, 1946. He wrote, at lunch today in the White House with only members of the staff present, Rear Admiral Sidney Sowers and I were presented with black cloaks, black hats and wooden daggers by Truman.
Jesus.
So much for Truman later on saying he never intended it to be a cloak and dagger group. You literally gave them cloaks and daggers.
No.
What did you?
I read that differently. I think I saw it this way. Truman was mocking because Truman knighted him as chief of the cloak and dagger group of snoopers and director of centralized snooping because Truman had made light of it. I got a sense that he truly did just want his daily bulletin and not so much operations, but that was my take on it, because what president would put someone in charge of covert operations and then do some stupid little stunt with wooden daggers? Isn't that beneath the president?
Truman.
Oh, I stand corrected.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
Maybe in Missouri, that's funny.
There is no such thing as something being beneath the president. I mean, that's like, unless it's
a porn,
you know,
star.
A hooker.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right,
a porn star willingly would not be beneath the president because she'd get crushed. But right. Outside of that, there is nothing.
I gotcha.
That is beneath the president. So Sowers was now in charge of nearly 2,000 intelligence officers and support staff. They had files and dossiers on 400,000 individuals.
Good.
But many of them had no idea what they were doing or what they were supposed to do. And when someone asked Sowers after his swearing in what he wanted to do, he said, "I just want to go home." He didn't want the gig.
No.
He was like, oh, fuck me. Really? Really?
He's got
to. Come on. Yeah. Harry, shit for brains.
But it gets worse. He's got this great responsibility, this, you know, pretty big staff or whatever. He's got no authority. He's got no direction from the White House. Why? Because even Truman himself doesn't quite sure what he wants this guy to do. I think you were saying this earlier, Truman was just trying to course correct from all the criticism of gutting the American military and the intelligence agencies too far. So he was just trying to change that. But he doesn't really know what he wants. He doesn't have a vision. He's just trying to solve an immediate problem that's in front of him.
Yeah, all Truman wanted was a summary of global intelligence on his desk every morning so he didn't have to read a stack of cables, if he is to be believed.
Right.
But Magruder was still convinced that Truman was secretly wanted a clandestine. He goes, well, again, what's with the fucking cloaks and daggers, man? If you don't want a cloak and dagger, you know, a wink is as good as a nod, right? So
right.
I mean, I can see how we would come to that conclusion. And Truman, of course, denied it later in life, but he also denied that dropping the bombs on the Japanese was a horrible mistake. Truman was one of those guys who, you know, would never acknowledge anything, would never get any mistake. He was just, no.
He's old school.
I'm an American. I don't acknowledge mistakes. I just push on and hope, no one notices. The rest of Washington wanted nothing to do with the CIG, the Pentagon, the State Department, the Army, the Navy, the FBI. None of them would even talk to Sowers.
Oh, not
they
a good morning.
They shut him out.
Yes.
And he only lasted 100 days in the role, and he said, fuck this shit, I'm a-going home.
So he's out. But he did leave behind a top secret memo that said, there is an urgent need to develop the highest possible quality of intelligence on the USSR in the shortest possible time. Because what had happened by then was, it's clear that the United States and the Soviet Union are not going to come to an agreement about those countries in Eastern Europe. Stalin, and I certainly think he has some validity here, says, I want these countries in my spheres of influence. I want to control them, and I want to have them as a buffer because it's only a matter of time before you capitalist sons of bitches come back invading Russia again. You've already done it twice. I know you're going to do it again. Whereas Truman wants those countries to be free, and when I say free, I want them to be free to follow America's lead, and I want them to be free to buy American goods. So we have a Mexican standoff in Eastern Europe, so clearly we have to, you know, be ready to check on what Soviets are doing in Eastern Europe and other places as well, because we can't trust them. We have to be ready to act.
So Sowers only lasted 100 days or so in the role, and the only intelligence coming out of the USSR in those days was from the newly appointed American ambassador in Moscow and himself a future director of the CIA, General Walter Bedell Smith.
Yeah, hard
good
ass.
Old Beetle Smith, the unsung and forgotten original member of the Beatles.
I knew that.
They took their name from him. I think he played the kazoo.
And then they kicked him out. Sons of bitches.
They kicked him out.
Sons
of bitches.
I know.
He wrote all their top hits.
I love you. Initially. Yeah. He was there. Just cranking them out.
Yeah.
But
cranking them out. But, you know, Paul and John, cold, fucking hearted killers. So, you know, they killed their you know, original bass player and drummer.
Yeah.
That story never comes out, but they had those guys killed.
That's surprising.
Anyway, see, they were in Germany at the time, man. You could get away with all sorts of shit in East, in West Berlin at the time, you know. And then they were from the cavern, you know. The back of the cavern was just, if you went behind, you know, they were behind the stage at the cavern in Liverpool.
Right.
Yeah, it's just bodies everywhere. Just like bodies. But there, yeah. People would go and they go, well, they go, oh, it's the Beatles. Former members of the Beatles.
Just
man.
Clean it up.
John and Paul kill them and then eat the flesh. It's really fucking creepy, man. You wouldn't believe it. This whole nice guy, they look so nice. Yeah.
Yeah, until they kill you, don't they? And eat you.
That's how they get you in. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All those Beatle mania groupies that disappeared. Yeah.
Yeah. Father Beans and Chianti.
So we've discovered today that you can do a Michael Jackson hee-hee. And you can do a Silence of the Lambs creepy noise.
And I'm proud of both. And my testicles are way up. Yeah, yeah.
This is like, he says the lockdown was a waste of time. Like you practiced all of these things. Highly useful.
I'll have something to show for it when it's all over with in 2022. Anyway.
Beatle Smith was there getting educated by our old friend George Keenan Thompson on how Russians worked, the Russian mind. Now, Beatle Smith, I think we've talked about this before, but he had been Eisenhower's chief of staff in World War II. That's what he did after he left the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to kill him, but he escaped and too became tough. Eisenhower's chief of staff. Yeah,
right.
Tough as nails, this guy.
Yes.
There's a story about him where he needed blood transfusions for a bleeding ulcer after he collapsed at the end of a dinner with Eisenhower and Churchill. But he then argued his way out of the hospital and back to his commander's tent so he could personally accept the surrender of the Nazis.
I ain't got time.
Bleeding ulcer. Don't have time for that.
Bleed out of my ass. Just put a diaper on it. I've got stuff to do.
You know, I don't know. but you're right, this guy was tough as nails. He comes from humble origins. He doesn't go to West Point, doesn't have a lot of money, doesn't have a lot of connections. Fucking through hard work alone, he rises through the ranks to become Eisenhower's chief of staff. That's incredible. I will share this with you for anybody who's interested in kind of personalities of military men. It turns out that Eisenhower was the kind of guy who did not like to look for trouble. And when trouble came, he would hope not to do anything, and he would hope it would kind of take care of itself. So being that kind of passive person, which is not what we think of when we think of Eisenhower, he purposefully chose someone like Bedell Smith, who was just a complete hard ass, didn't give a shit, hatchet man, efficient person. He got someone to balance himself out. And I think you can argue that they did well together, but people would smile when Eisenhower walked in the room, and people would shit a brick when Bedell Smith would walk in the room. He was feared. He was respected, but he was feared by everybody as well because he did not play any games. And now, when he goes to Moscow, Eisenhower said, you know what? Serve Stalin right. He's going to get a son of a bitch in his face, but it's his own fault for being difficult. He's brought this on himself. So we'll see what happens with those two later on.
So he gets to Moscow in March of 1946, and about a month later, he goes to visit Stalin at the Kremlin alone.
Ooh, yeah, at night.
Now, Beadle asks Stalin, what does the Soviet Union want, and how far is Russia going to go? Stalin apparently looks up at the ceiling, smokes his cigarette, and says, we have no designs on any other nation. We have no design. He denounced Churchill's Iron Curtain speech, which had been delivered in Missouri a few weeks earlier. Stalin said Russia understood its enemies. Ooh. Beadle said, or asked, is it possible that you really believe that the United States and Great Britain are united in an alliance to thwart Russia? Stalin replied, duh.
Damn.
So then Beadle asked him again, how far is Russia going to go? Stalin apparently looked him in the eyes and said, we're not going to go too much further. How much further is too much further?
Yeah.
Nobody really knew, but there is like, yes, we think you're just ganging up against us,
yeah,
but we're not going to go too much further, and we have no designs on any other nation.
I've got the tip in. I'm just a little further. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know that I, for one, believe him at this particular juncture.
Yes.
I think Russia had been destroyed, 22 million dead during World War II, economy in tatters. They're not getting the sort of money to reparations out of East Germany that they had expected. They're getting shit out of the US for reparations. They've had famines. You know, they've got a lot of problems internal. And he doesn't have the bandwidth to expand. But that said, they needed trading partners.
Yes.
They needed to be able to trade with people.
Somebody.
It's obvious that they don't feel like they're going to be able to have a productive trading relationship with the West.
Mm-hmm.
So if the West is trying to take over Europe using the Marshall Plan to bring them into the Western economic bloc, that would leave no one for Russia to trade with. So, yeah, they're going to have to find some countries that they can bring into their economic sphere, or America's going to swallow them all up.
Yeah.
Now, America's view, obviously, is they were trying to save these countries from domestic and internal communist movements. Who's right, who's wrong, depends on your POV. But I genuinely think Stalin is being honest here. He didn't have any plans for expansion unless he was forced into securing economic and trade relationships.
Yeah. And if you think about it, by the end of World War II, how many skirmishes has there been in Europe, say, for the last 200 or 300 years? I mean, how would he not firmly believe there's going to be another war? I mean, he himself, like Truman at first, they don't know the Cold War is coming. They don't know they're going to set up lines and there's going to be missiles pointed at each other. And in a lot of ways, it's going to work because there's going to be mutual deterrence and all that kind of stuff. They have no idea this is coming. As far as Stalin knows, there is going to be another war. It's a matter of who, when, how it starts, whatever. Why would he not protect himself? And you don't build your country up from a Second World War just to have it smashed again in the Third World War. That's stupid and idiotic. He is going to have a buffer that he's never had before, and you can't blame him. Yes, those people are going to lose their individual liberties, but for him, that's a price he's willing to pay. I get his side. I get his mentality.
Me too.
Yeah. Sorry.
He's going to have a buffer, and you're going to have a fluffer. That's your dream one day, isn't it?
One day.
Personal fluffer.
One day. I've been practicing for D'Angelo, but I don't want to talk about that.
Well, you are the fluffer, but you want your own fluffer. While you're fluffing D'Angelo, you want someone particularly at least 2 feet shorter than you fluffing you.
Is that too much to ask for? I don't think so. Anyway.
No, that's, you know, with all of everything you've contributed to the world of podcasting, I think the state should provide you one. It should be funded by the Treasury.
Hear.
For your services rendered. Services rendered.
Yeah. Yes.
A lifelong fluffer. Private fluffer. And that's actually going to be their name. They'll be a private in the army. Their name is Private Fluffer.
I'm seeing no downside so far with everything you've just said.
For you.
For me.
The fluffer. not so good. Not so much. But
anyway.
Now, Beadle, 1950, Beadle would go on to become the director of the CIA. But before him, on June 10th, 1946, after a sweet and sour, Rear Admiral Sweet and Sour said, fuck all y'all, I'm going home.
Yeah.
General Hoyt Vandenberg.
Nice name.
Became the second director of the Central Intelligence Group. Do you know what he did before that, Ray?
All I know is that he was in command of Eisenhower's tactical air arm in Europe. That is all I know.
Do you know what he did before that?
He was in the circus. No, I don't know.
No.
Tell me.
He was in the import business.
Vandelay?
Just imports, no exports?
He's an importer-exporter, okay?
Yeah, Vandelay Industries, Vandenberg Industries was originally called, and changed it to Vandelay in his trees.
Oh my God, our periods of saint. But anyway, please go on with your story.
But now he's the director of the CIG. Now here's something else you may not know about him.
Yes.
The Washington Post once described him as the most impossibly handsome man on the entire Washington scene.
Wow.
Something that I know they once called you the same thing. And
Marilyn Monroe
once named Vandenberg, along with Joe DiMaggio and Albert Einstein, as one of the three people with whom she would want to be stranded on a deserted island.
That's hot.
And she said, preferably all three at the same time, because, as she said, God didn't give me three holes for any of them to get wasted.
She was a very modern young lady. Good for her. You know, whatever she wants.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's her body, like, well, her right.
You know, Albert can teach me physics.
Right.
Joe can teach me baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Vandenberg can teach me spying.
Right. Or export business.
All while they're bukkakeing over my double D breasts. I mean, it's the perfect scenario, you know.
Consensual, as long as it's consensual, they should be able to do what they want. That's how.
Best answer of what would you take with you to a deserted island that I've ever heard.
I would take King Michael of Romania. I'm just going to put that out there. Yeah,
I know you would.
And I'm done.
Good one, Norma Jean. Now, the problem was,
right?
As we said earlier, the problem was the CIG stood outside the law.
Yeah.
And that's not just my theory.
No.
That's the judgment of the General Counsel for Central Intelligence, Lawrence Houston,
right,
from 1946 to 1972.
He should know.
He was like, yeah, we're running an illegal op here. This is, it's all illegal.
Yeah. No paper. All no illegal. Consent.
Yeah.
Congress.
Yeah.
We're winging it, baby.
Do whatever the fuck we want and no one can stop us.
We're cowboys. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's Lawrence Houston's obit in the New York Times, written by, written by Tim Weiner, author of Legacy of Ashes, the excellent history of the CIA, who we will be using a lot for our series on the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote, this is 1995, he wrote, Lawrence R. Houston, an architect of the Central Intelligence Agency who built the legal foundation on which it rests and the facades behind which it hid, died on Tuesday. He was 82, died of a heart attack while vacationing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Houston was the first general counsel at the CIA from the agency's creation in 1947 until 1973. His business was keeping the secret agency out of trouble in an open democracy. Espionage is, by its nature, illegal. Mr. Houston's job was to tell the agency what it could do under American law and, more rarely, what it could not. So there you go. You know, 26 years as general counsel helped it get away with all of the dirty shit that it was doing during that period.
Good point, yeah.
In 1950, it was Houston who created the complex network of fronts that the CIA operated and probably continue to operate behind, including, famously, Air America.
Right.
The global airline that the CIA secretly owned and did drug running and gun running and the Iran-Contra affair and all that kind of stuff. He also was one of the guy that helped keep the secret that the CIA had hired mafia bosses to try and help assassinate Fidel Castro. In the early 60s.
Right.
so a long and honorable career. Received the National Security Medal.
Okay.
Yeah, got lots of awards for hiding shit that they didn't want the public to know about the CIA.
Do you think he slept well at night?
Oh, yeah. Psychopaths always sleep well at night. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, got my 8 hours. Yeah. So basically, this guy's admitting, look, pretty much what we did was outside the law. There's no consent of Congress, that kind of stuff. Federal agency, whatever. We just pulled it out of our own ass. So there it is. But I think because now that Vandenberg is in charge, he has to come up with a new name in case, you know, the Secretary of War, the Army, the Navy, the State Department, the Chiefs of Staff get angry and try to shut him down. So he comes up with the fourth edition of the intelligence service. I think it's number four. It's the Office of Special Operations, and they were going to spy overseas. Vandenberg goes to a couple of congressmen, nudge and a wink, gets $15 million. He's got his budget, and now it's time to go into Eastern and Central Europe and find out exactly what the Soviets are up to.
So he ordered Dick Helms to find out everything he could about the Soviet movements and intentions across Eastern and Central Europe. Helms later said it was like being an apprentice juggler trying to keep an inflated beach ball, an open milk bottle, and a loaded machine gun in the air, which is how I describe my life, basically. Didn't have any trained agents. What he had was what he called a legion of political exiles, former intelligence officers, ex-agents, and sundry entrepreneurs who were turning themselves into intelligence moguls, brokering the sale of fabricated-to-order information.
Right.
The more his spies spent buying intelligence, the less valuable the intelligence actually became. He said, if there are any more graphic illustrations of throwing money at a problem that hasn't been thought through, none comes to mind. So basically, you know, the CIA would walk in and go, we've got big money for anyone who can give us secrets. And everyone's like, I have secrets? Fucking secrets. Yeah. I've got secrets.
Well, one of the secrets was a drunken Soviet officer bragged that Russia would strike without warning. Or the commander of Soviet forces in the Balkans had toasted because Istanbul supposedly was going to fall very soon. But you've got to imagine these naive Americans show up, waving their big wads of cash. Everybody's coming out of the woodworks. You tell me what you want to hear, and I'll fucking say it. It's all about the Soviets. It's all bad. They're going to take over the world. And even though he knows at least 50% of this stuff is bullshit that he's paid for, he still sends it to Washington. It goes up the chain of command. And these rumors, these innuendos, these whatever you want to call them that they paid for, is scaring the shit out of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Because now they think the Red Army is going to be on the move very soon.
Fast forward 55 years later, the CIA is still convinced that Saddam is hiding weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Some things don't change.
Of Saddam's political opponents told them that, so they would come and, you know, help get him out of power. Ugh. Yeah, so the CIA, and I guess that's sort of the premise of Tim Weiner's book, Legacy of Ashes, is the CIA didn't learn shit over the course of its career. No. It's failed at pretty much everything it's ever tried. And when it has succeeded, it's also failed. Like, he uses examples where, well, like the one success they really had was when they managed to get the Russians out of Afghanistan in the 80s. But in doing so, they trained up and weaponized the Mujahideen, which then became Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, which came back and attacked the US. So he said even when they succeeded, they failed.
And those
failures, if their job
lasted,
is to protect America, they failed. Yeah, so exactly. It's just a legacy of failures that they have. Anyway, as you say, Vandenberg was sending back all this information. Washington was freaking the fuck out. They didn't know what to believe. So Vandenberg also decided quickly that the group's mission had to change. It had to become an operating agency, not just gathering intel. It needed to be out there. We're doing subversive operations, doing shit in foreign countries to affect potential outcomes.
Yeah.
Now, it didn't have any legal authority to do that, but it did it anyway. This time, he personally asked the Secretary of War, Robert Patterson, who, of course, is starring in the new Batman film.
Good for him.
My elder boys are very excited about that. They think it's going to be good. I say, nah, it's being made by DC. It's probably going to suck balls because the vast majority of DC superhero films do suck balls. Joker, okay. Joker was a one-off. Very good film. Everything else that they've done since, well, pretty much ever. except, okay, Heath Ledger. Batman Dark Knight, good.
He was good.
That was good.
Yeah.
Good the Joker. Yeah, two good things they've ever done involved brilliant actors playing the Joker. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Everything else they've done sucked. So, anywho, Robert Pattinson, and he went to Secretary of State's Jimmy Burns.
Who's still around.
Our old mate Jimmy Burns. Yeah. He's briefly still in the job.
Yeah, he'll be gone soon.
And got them to slip him a secret 10 million greenbacks, brown paper bags under the table, to finance the work of his intelligence agents all over the world, which they did, which... reminds me, getting back to the Afghanistan story, which we'll get to at some point, hopefully, if we live that long.
Right.
When they decided to infiltrate Afghanistan to destabilize Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Because the government there in the late 70s was pro-USSR. CIA wanted to destabilize it, cause problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their intention was to turn Afghanistan into the Soviet Union's Vietnam.
Right.
And again, they couldn't go out and publicly, because the Church Committee hearings had just happened in the mid-70s, where the CIA was told, cut that fucking shit out.
Yeah.
Nod, nod, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So they went and again, got secret funding. Slush funds,
right?
To get that whole thing started because they couldn't do it legally, and then that Iran-Contra in the '80s again, where they were selling guns to Iran to illicitly get funds to fundle to the Contras in Nicaragua. You know, it's just getting illegal money all over the place.
Jesus.
Was the CIA's MO from the very beginning. Wasn't something that happened later on. From the very get-go, it was an illegal operation, so it couldn't get legal money. It had to get illegal. He had to get money illegally in order to operate.
Yes, from day one.
So Vandenberg decided to use this illicit money to create an underground resistance force in Romania.
Oh, good.
Which would be because Romania had become a socialist republic after the war.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, they decided because they had all of this fake intelligence that Russia was going to attack or attack Europe or something.
Yeah.
They decided they needed to disrupt these governments. These, you know, whether or not you think the elections were valid or not, these were elections they'd had in Romania that chose a socialist government.
Mm-hmm.
And the Americans have decided that they're going to create a coup, the condition for a coup, by disabling the Romanian government. So he had a loose group of agents there that Frank Wisner had left behind when he quit and went back to his law firm.
Yeah. Unfortunately, and I think you were making this point earlier, so there's this group of agents that Frank had left behind in Bucharest, but, and they're dying to work with the Americans, not just because they have cash, because I'm guessing they don't like the Soviets. Doesn't matter. The Soviets have already infiltrated all these different organizations, so the Soviets know what's going on. So there's a new station chief in Bucharest. He's the chief of the Office of Special Operations, Charles W. Hostler. And what does he find when he gets there? It's a veritable Wild West in Romania. There's conspiracies. There's double dealings. There's occasionally murder and assassination. There's people going around who are fascists, communists, monarchists, industrialists, anarchists, moderates, idealists. And the point is, when he gets there, he looks around and he sees the complex, multi-layered area that Romania is. And he just knows Americans are not ready for this. But it doesn't matter because Vandenberg, like you said, had sent in Hamilton and Hall into Bucharest, and they're supposed to take the Romanians National Peasant Party, and they're supposed to turn it into a resistance force. This sounds good on paper, but keep in mind the Americans have no idea how to do this, who they can trust, or how to make this work.
Also, keep in mind that Bill Donovan's briefcase was taken by some sort of hooker
well,
in Bucharest.
An independent contractor.
To the Russians, so they have probably all of their code books and good all point. Of this kind of
all
stuff.
All their names. Yeah.
Mm.
Good point.
So Vandenberg's guys met with the National Peasant Party leaders and offered the secret support of the United States government. Look, we'll give you guns, money, intelligence. Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic.
Good times.
You're going to win. You're going to be heroes.
You're going to get tired of winning.
Legends.
Yeah.
Oh, so tired of winning. Yeah. You're gonna be living in mansions. We're gonna take good care of you. And they're like, hookers. Fuck yes, about yeah. time, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
So then they smuggled the former foreign minister of Romania and five other members of their Liberation Army into Austria.
Five, huh?
By sedating them.
Yeah.
Stuffing them in mail sacks and sexy. Flying them.
Yeah. Oh, they're mail. Oh, was yeah. it a leather? Tell me it was a leather pouch. It doesn't have to be true. Leather just tell pouch, me it was yeah. a leather pouch.
Yeah. Yes. And ball gags, the whole thing.
Zipper over the mouth. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Gimp suits they were wearing. Look, I don't know. Why do we have to wear the gimp suit? Look.
Trust me.
We don't I'm the make agent. The. This is, right. this is secret intelligence. Who's the experts in secret intelligence, black ops here?
Just trust
me. You be asking questions. Your job's not right. to ask questions. Right. Everything will. But why is there like a big hole in my ass? Well, listen. As I said.
It's complicated.
Everything will become clear right. when you get to Austria. Austria. I've heard weird shit about Austrians. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's.
Well, you're about to find
yeah,
out.
Yeah, you think. Yeah, you think those stories you've heard are bad. Why till you.
Now, this is.
Until you get there.
This
my
is
friend.
The important part. If someone unzips the zipper that's over your mouth, just open your mouth and let it ride. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, just swallow. Just don't swallow. Ask questions. Just swallow.
If there's a microfilm hidden in some semen. It's of water. We need you to swallow that. I don't know. I'm making this shit up.
It's very anyway. Complicated. Spycraft is very complicated.
It might take me
we've
a couple
been studying it for
minutes.
We've been studying it for weeks now. You know, it's taken us weeks to come up with these very detailed strategies.
Anyway.
It's a bit like the Catholic priest when you were young told you that God's forgiveness came in the semen that you had to swallow. Well, you know, yeah, you got the bread
true.
And the wine.
Right, yeah, yeah, but there's a forgiveness juice.
The rest of the Eucharist.
Semen. Said,
yeah, Jesus said, eat this bread, it is my body. Drink this wine, it is my blood. Drink this cum, it is well, it's my cum, basically.
It's
we
Jesus
call it
cum.
Forgiveness juice.
Right.
Yeah, it's Jesus juice.
Oh my God. Hour two.
They edited that bit out of the Bible that the general public gets.
Good
when
call.
You become a cardinal
oh,
or
then you
priest,
get,
you
right.
get you get that version of the Bible.
Edition.
It all that's the version yeah. that opens up with don't tell anyone, but we made all this up. So anyway.
That's the first.
So they smuggled all these guys out into Austria to lead the
right.
resistance. Now,
yes.
it took Soviet intelligence and the Romanian secret police roughly about 12 minutes to infiltrate the Americans' organization
oh,
here.
That's embarrassing.
The resistance was crushed. The Americans ran for their lives. The resistance leaders were all thrown in prison or executed for being traitors.
Yeah.
And the ones who were in Austria were tried in absentia. Now, Frank Wisner
yeah.
opened the New York Times on November 20th, 1946, to find out that the agents he had left behind were all in prison or dead, and his former personal secretary had committed suicide. So the very first operation
yes.
of America's new Central Intelligence Group was also its first huge fuck-up.
Well, at least we wasted $10 million. Back then was a lot of money, so we got that going for us.
Well, it's not. I wouldn't think of it as wasting it.
Experience
I
gained?
I would say you could. Yeah, you could sum up the 70, 80-year history of the CIA as
sure.
spending hundreds of billions of dollars in order to learn what doesn't work.
Oh, first you eliminate
one day,
what doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's just the scientific method, right?
That's it. It sounds pricey.
You can afford it. You have to try everything to find out what doesn't work. By definition, what is left must work.
I can't wait for that day.
They haven't found that. Yeah, they haven't found that yet.
One day.
Working towards it. Sneaking up on it.
Oh, man.
Give them another couple of hundred years, a few trillion dollars.
I can't wait.
And get it all sorted out.
Good times.
So Frank Wisner left his law firm again and went to Washington to get a job at the State Department. His view was to take over the running of the CIA, but we will leave that for future episodes.
Yes.
How can you close me up? On what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Just imports, no exports?
He's an importer-exporter, okay?